Welcome to the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast, where we help urologists and staff achieve peak economic and practice efficiency so there is time and energy to focus on patient care and a happy life. I'm your host, Scott Painter, with my co-hosts, Mark Painter and Dr. Ray Painter.
Today's episode is brought to you by ModMed. Do your EHR and PM adapt to your style of practice? The ModMed EHR and PM do, with benefits like remembering preferences and automatically suggesting documentation and billing codes. Urologists voted ModMed the number one urology-specific EHR and PM solution available, built by urologists with input from yours truly. Stop wasting 60 minutes and 200 for each of your open or no-show slot. Go to modmed.com/PRSnetwork. Set up an appointment with the team at ModMed Urology and shift your urology practice into high gear. Imagine a solution on a tablet or the web that works seamlessly with revenue cycle management, analytics, telehealth, payment processing, patient engagement tools, and much more. ModMed is transforming healthcare by placing doctors and patients at the center of care.
Welcome to episode 171 of the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Painter, with my co-host, Mark Painter and Dr. Ray Painter. And today we want to welcome special guest, Dr. Lisa Finkelstein. And we want to talk about telehealth. Dr. Finkelstein is the chair of the AUA task force, the telehealth task force. So we want to get Lisa's insight. And she just actually won an award, the 2023 Dr. James Bush Award for Excellence in Telehealth. Congratulations on that. We were excited to have you on and like you to tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background. And what we'll do is after you share a little bit about yourself, your background, we want to ask you a few questions about telehealth and talk about what's coming up in 2024 and beyond. So welcome, and let's hear a little bit about you.
Thank you, Scott. And it is certainly my honor and my pleasure to be with the Painters today. I have been with you guys. Mark knows this, but since I was a resident and you guys first got started and I was just getting started, and I met Mark and I met Ray back in the 90s when we were learning how to code. So jump ahead many years. I am a semi-retired urologist. I'm the medical director of telehealth at St. John's Health in Jackson, Wyoming. I'm a telehealth champion because I practice in a very rural state, Wyoming, and had to fly on a twin engine airplane and drive to Pinedale for about 12 or 13 years. And so became interested in telemedicine in 2011 and dabbled a little bit in it. It wasn't ready. And then in 2018, started practicing teleurology with a HIPAA compliant Zoom license with my first patient in Dubois, Wyoming, who had MS and a neurogenic bladder. And I haven't looked back. And so I'm on the board of the NRTRC, which is the Northwest Regional Telehealth Resource Center. And we have TRCs around the country. It's a national, federally funded organization. I'm also on the board of the Wyoming Telehealth Consortium. And just so you guys know that the QI Summit, the AUA QI Summit, December 2nd, the topic is telehealth. So urology and urologists are very, very interested in telehealth. We are innovators. We don't shy away from technology. We love lasers and robotics and genomics and everything technology. So it really fits in with urologists, telemedicine.
Oh, that's excellent. And what a wealth of knowledge that you've accumulated over the years. And it's interesting how being in a rural setting kind of gave you that jump start into the telehealth arena. All right. Well, let's ask some questions. Mark, I'll turn it over to you to ask the first question.
So we'll start off with the first one on all this stuff is, you know, as you got started into telehealth and now looking back, how would you help somebody a urologist jump into telehealth? I know kind of everybody got a little bit of a taste of it during the pandemic if they were practicing, but now it seems like everybody's going back. So some people are starting over again. So how do you help folks kick it off within their practice?
What I would say to physicians, we are a very smart and stubborn bunch. So what I would say to physicians, whatever specialty, is make it your own. And I say that because telemedicine is medicine. So teleurology is urology. And to not make it really any more complicated than that. Everyone knows what telemedicine is now because of the pandemic. It was one of the silver linings that happened from the pandemic, if there was one. And so I would say, just like in anything, is don't be afraid to dip your toes into this little world of technology. And we now know how simple it is because of the ubiquitous of the platforms that are out there, like Zoom or Doxy.me, which is very user-friendly. And I could, you know, list a bunch. Or many practices have EHRs that have video platforms that are embedded within that EHR, whether it's through their portal or separately. So there's different ways. But to keep it simple, it's just a matter of finding a HIPAA-compliant video platform that's easy to use and possibly connected to your EHR, and then come up with a practice management plan similar to what you do when you onboard a patient in real life. So it's basically a similar workflow that you use, that practices use to bring patients into their office, except instead of doing that, they're just meeting the patient where they are at home using a video platform. So if somebody is afraid of the technology, and I have to say that I was one of them, I'm, you know, an older traditional urologist, and my kids joke about it all the time that they can't believe their mom is head of telehealth since I'm not a technology person. And so I asked for help, and I had a gentleman who worked in IT who helped get me started, at least to feel comfortable. And then you have to train or talk to the people, your support staff, your front desk, your nurses, the people that help run your practice, and say, okay, we have a new plan in how we're going to see patients, this telemedicine tool, and this is how we're going to do it. And so it's the same type of thought process, really just a little bit different than what you would do to bring a patient in real life.
Okay. And staying along the same lines, because I've, you know, as I tour around, I find the same things, right? And you're articulating these things so well. So as you start the new business line, are there resources or things available that can help you get your front staff or your video MA or whoever's the roomer of the patient? Are there things that you can kind of offload that training or augment your training out there that you know of?
Yes. So in the organization that I'm involved with, the NRTRC, and again, there's each region around the country has their own TRC. Telehealth resource centers, and you can look them up. Even states have their own telehealth resources that are free and open to the public. There are courses that are now geared towards what we call digital literacy. And what that is onboarding patients that are not comfortable with technology. that that don't know how to download an app or get on a platform. What these courses do is expedite your front desk or your administrator or your office manager to learn how to be efficient with telehealth. And so there's these courses that are out there that are training support staff to be efficient in telehealth, because this is not going away. Telehealth is here to stay. It is for sure a part of every successful practice. And I do think that it's worthwhile if you have a telehealth champion in your practice to have them take these type of courses so that they can become proficient and efficient in telemedicine.
All right. So I'm going to say two things. Like, one, I don't think you should have an if you have a telehealth champion. I think you should have a telehealth champion if you're doing it right. So I'll pile on that. But the second thing, when we were prepping, you know, we were talking about consumerism as a driver now in healthcare. So one of the things that I constantly bump up against with different groups is one, you know, I'm my patients can't handle that. And you kind of talked a little bit about the digital side of this. But the other part is, you know, I think that, you know, kind of the way everything evolved with telehealth and the pandemic is we kind of used a shotgun for telehealth. And, you know, that's, I think as I'm watching people adapt it and adapt to it longer term, depending on where they live, right? That there are some visits that are better suited for telehealth than others. Are there recommendations that you give to groups to kind of talk your patients and your physicians into how to schedule and how to really put and work telehealth into the workflow in an office day to day?
Okay, so let's go back to the first thing you were talking about, which is consumerism, which I think is a really important point to emphasize in today's world. And, you know, the demographics are, and the generations, this is sort of an age-old issue. But right now, patients are now being talked about as consumers. The word patient is almost an old term, which I know is a little offensive to people, but especially physicians. But patients are now very savvy on how to get their health care. And because of the pandemic, which was this trigger, you know, to force this innovation, they've now been exposed to the efficiency of how healthcare can look, where healthcare is being brought to the consumer, to the patient. And my opinion is that healthcare is changing so fast, and that the paradigm of the thought process of saying we need to bring the patient to the doctor so that we can take their blood pressure and take their vital signs, that is shifting away, and that the patient is now expecting that their healthcare is going to be delivered where they are. Healthcare is meeting them where they are. And the technology is moving so fast now that the practices that I think are going to be the most successful are the practices that embrace technology, that embrace telemedicine and artificial intelligence and all of these things that are making healthcare so much more efficient and cost effective. On the second point that you brought up, which was how do you arrange your practice so that it is efficient? I think Mark and I have talked about this from the very beginning of telemedicine, and we are on the exact same page. And that is that the practices that arrange their workflow and their day so that they can maximize their time to the most efficient way, which is to organize the visits that are appropriate for telemedicine, because as Mark said, not every visit is appropriate for telemedicine, and bunch them up so that in that hour, you can then whip through 5 to 7 minute visits, get your work RVUs, get, document appropriately, of course, and get the appropriate code, of course. And you can then really ramp up the volume that you have by looking at your day and organizing yourself to be more efficient and more profitable.
I've got a follow-up to that question. With, you know, when you batch, and this is really kind of in the weeds, but when you batch your telehealth and you say every 5 to 7 minutes, that's obviously using your staff in a very efficient way to have all the patients queued up for you to do that. Is that, did you see that working pretty effectively? Have you seen the docs that are efficient with this seeing that many patients?
Or, I think
you tell that,
yeah, I think, yes. I think that they are more the exception rather than the rule, because their brain, again, you know, people tend to go to what they're comfortable with. So physicians are used to going in a room, coming out of a room, going into a room, coming out of a room. And so they're not used to thinking that I'm just going to sit down. Looking at a computer and saying, my front staff is going to room the patient, get the patient up on the video, then I'm going to practice at the top of my license. I'm going to be the doctor. I'm not rooming the patient. I'm not scheduling the patient. I am going to give my urologic advice, review the images, review the labs, click end. Next patient is up and ready. Same thing, give my advice on erectile dysfunction, whatever it is, click end and then go. Yes, so busy practices that can figure that out, where the urologist is just seeing patient after patient and learning how to document, that's the other thing, is that with artificial intelligence, this is where, you know, the next thing is happening, is that to be even more efficient, is that we have ambient dictation, voice-activated notes, notes that are pre-populated, and then the physician is just sitting down with the patient. And so again, cost savings, efficiency, all of that.
Yeah. And as you'll recall, last week when we covered the final rule, you know, Medicare, you know, once again reiterated that in 2024, all of the telehealth, including telephone only, is going to continue to be paid and covered at the same rate. So, and that's the same rate as an in-person visit. And when you measure that up, so not only do you have time savings, you also save the expenses of rooming the patient, flipping the room, all of those things that are in place. So it's a double win. When you look at it from that standpoint. And then the other thing, if you remember from the final rule, Medicare came out and finalized that they're going to pay place of service 10 at the same rate they're going to pay place of service 11, which is actually the foundation for long-term telehealth coverage. And then finally, you'll also remember that we talked about the new add-on code G2211, which was added, and we talked about how you're going to be able to use that a lot in urology. And it was also added to the telehealth list and for audio only. So you're not going to lose anything from the work RVU or the revenue side for doing telehealth in 2024. And really, it looks like they're laying the foundation that that'll go beyond. We have multiple bills in Congress that they're kind of waiting for the budget to come through. And I know, I mean, waiting for Congress to do anything these days is like a real prayer lotto win. But eventually, I think the demand is there that both sides will come together on something there. So I expect it to be there long term. So we need to prepare for it. And that's what you've been saying, you know, now since 2018, you know, as we started talking about this, and before that, when we were talking about how telehealth would be there. So.
Can I ask you really quick, Mark, is yeah. that when you say that they're paying for audio only, and yeah, telehealth is for sure here to stay. But is that true? You know, from what I understand is, and we don't, you know, are they going to be paying the same as in real life? The word is that for audio only, it's going to be less than. And then with the private payers, how does that going to work?
So we don't know totally how the private payers are going to react, although some of the private payers are still forcing everyone to use place of service 02. So eventually they'll probably come up with 10, but with Medicare now laying the groundwork that place of service 10 is the same as place of service 11, I think that's going to push at least the Medicare Advantage plans in that direction. And of course, a lot of these commercial units now are doing both Medicare and Medicare Advantage, Medicare Advantage and commercial. So there's usually a little bit more bleed over. So there may be some influences that go that direction now that CMS has made that pivot. And then, of course, the telephone only visits, they actually pay the same as the 2, 3, and 4 for the office visit. The problem is that you can only get a telephone only visit based on time. So you lose on telephone only. Right. But as you mentioned, the digital literacy of the population, the health population, is continuously growing. I mean, actually the digital literacy of the world is continuously growing. I mean, even in, you know, some places where you don't have roads or infrastructure, everybody's using their phone to do everything. So, you know, that's coming along as well. So, and so is our infrastructure for internet, which is of course the other problem that we're up against with some of this. So I do think that it's going to continue to evolve. Now, long-term telephone only, Medicare still has that in the, maybe. So that's the one thing I worry about more than anything is that telephone only visit staying in play. But you can also see from the groundwork that they're laying with PIN and CIH, which is Community Health Integration. So it's CHI and principal
care.
PCM and CCM are one thing. But the PIN is a new program that they've added in where they're trying to do, and both CHI and PIN are not only taking into account what the physicians do, but having patients get in touch with some of the other barriers to healthcare, like food insecurity and transportation and utilities and all those things, where Medicare is really trying to make a push to give more resources to the practices who are actually trying to navigate to support their patients' health. So, you know, the impetus for all carriers, especially in the Medicare and Medicare Advantage and Medicaid side. So those are your kind of the people that have the most long-term chronic issues, if you will, is really about the total patient package. And I don't think you can do that without telehealth. You just can't. So
no, telehealth is now becoming just one part of another tool to be used in our arsenal for practicing medicine. And just like you're talking about remote patient monitoring, we didn't even get into that. And that's a whole nother podcast where we're, you know, again, bringing healthcare to the patient where they are at home, hospital at home. I mean, it is mind-boggling what is happening out there in the world of innovation and technology. It's like I say, it's, you know, put your seatbelts on, people, because the world of healthcare, I think, as we know it, it will be unrecognizable in our lifetime.
Well said. Ray, any thoughts, questions?
Well, we've talked about the consumer, the patient, and making it easy. But, you know, healthcare right now, the consumers are becoming very knowledgeable about what they want and knowing how they want it. And once, and fortunately, I've had an opportunity to test it on the patient side. And I can tell you, I may be a little more knowledgeable than the average consumer, but I think the average consumer is catching up quickly. But there are many visits. I just don't like to go in to see the doc. I want it to be telemedicine. So giving the patient a choice, you're going to include telemedicine in your future. It's great.
Ray, I think you just hit the nail on the head. It's about giving choices to patients. And if you do that, if your front desk offers telemedicine as an option when they're checking out to do a follow-up visit, then that's another great idea, is to, you know, be very forward about saying, we offer telemedicine and we can review your MRI without you coming in. Patients love that.
Yep.
That is so exciting where this is headed and what we have available to us right now. All right. Let's wrap this episode up here. I want to go around the horn, get some final thoughts. And again, we want to thank Dr. Finkelstein for joining us. So final thoughts, Mark. Final thoughts on.
I think, you know, as you know, in a podcast like this, we can touch on some things, but not all things. And hopefully we've given you some ideas and some ways to leverage telehealth moving forward. And you can hear from our thoughts, and as you've heard in the past, I've been a fan of telehealth even before the pandemic. I've always thought that, you know, the reimbursement hurdle was going to get solved because the patients need it. And quite frankly, with our urology shortage, we've got to figure out a way to move patients through the system faster. And I think there are a lot of things that telehealth can help us with. We've scratched the surface here. We'll probably have to come back and revisit this again. And hopefully Lisa will come back with us and when we'll talk about this again.
Ray, final thoughts.
Lisa, first, I'd like to say that was extremely well done. Your idea of duplicating the office practice and the office visit when you're setting up the telemedicine visit is something that the docs ought to really take very seriously. I'd never really thought of it exactly that way, and I think that is excellent advice. You've got to get the patient, you got to get the chart, you got to do all of this. And if you set up your staff to really recognize that, I think you'd have the part of your problem solved.
All right. And we'll give the last word to Lisa. Final thoughts.
I'll leave it at this is be a champion. Be a telemedicine champion. And what I like to say is keep calm and telly on.
Right on. Love it. Very good. Well, thank you. We really appreciate you joining us and sharing your wisdom on telehealth. And we look forward to having you back in the future. We want to thank ModMed for sponsoring this episode. And if you're in the market for an EHR or a practice management system, please go to modmed.com/PRS network for our audience. They do have a discount. And finally, I will remind you that the Urology Advanced Coding and Reimbursement Seminar is coming up in Las Vegas very quickly. So there is still time to register. If you want to do that, you can go to prsnetwork.com. There's a button right there on the homepage. And also, if you go to prsnetwork.com/171 for episode 171, we will also put a link into the telehealth resource center that Lisa mentioned. So that's all we got for today. Thank you again, Lisa. All right. Take us out, Ray.
Happy coding.
Thank you for listening to the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast, where we help urologists and their staff maximize income and efficiencies so there's time and energy for patient care and a happy life. Special thanks to Carl Painter for the music today. You can find his music on Spotify under his record label, The Juicery.